Marriage Hour number 13, Pastor John Coleman in Los Angeles, California, in the Lucy Coleman Studio. Thanking you for joining me for another hour of post and pre marriage counseling. But first,
I said help is on the way.
Help is on the way.
So don't give up. Keep on believing. Just when it seems all over,
help is on the way.
To all the mothers fighting danger that plague your children, know that
help is on the way.
To every father born to conquer, who's down and wounded, know that
help is on the way.
So don't give up, keep on believing. Just when it seems all over, say,
help is on the way.
Tell all the teachers and all the preachers, to all God's creatures, know that
help is on the way.
And I know you're
tired
trying to be strong.
Thing that I like about the music from my community. We're very easily moved to sing about help is on the way. Well, of course, in terms of our Christian subject matter of marriage, help is always on the way to the Christian family. At times when we don't think that there's any help that can keep that family together, a lot of times we feel trapped in relationships. Find ourselves, as one has said, in a very complex web of conflict, confusion, mistrust, misdirect anger, and doubt. Sometimes we don't understand how the web got spun in the first place and how to get ourselves out of it. Sometimes we think that divorce is the answer, or finding another person to be with is the answer. But don't give up, don't give in. Listen to this. Keep on believing. Yeah.
Just when it seems all over, say,
help is on the way.
Yes, it is now.
Don't give.
And no matter, I keep on believing.
Just gotta keep believing.
You know, it's a great thing to really look deep down within yourself and find that the answer to the entire relationship thing is found in you. And once you look to that and see what Jesus Christ wants to do in your life and how he wants to personify his life in your life, then help is on the way. And then that help will resolve it. Thank you for joining me for hour number 13 as we rapidly, continuously move through these hours of marriage counseling. You know, when there's self-respect and you look at things and put it in its right perspective, you won't be driven towards the chase. I didn't know what the chase was until I spoke with a Christian male friend of mine. I've always been the kind of guy that was satisfied with the Lucy that I met back in 1967. When things got frustrating between us within the wholesome relationship, There never was a tendency for me to get involved in the chase. The chase is trying to see how many women I can get. I think I spoke about that in counseling session number 12. You know, it comes from an old African kind of a thing. You know, how many women can I get? Marriage is nothing that we are to look reliable in. I'm just trying to make more strong offspring. No, it's not like that. A lot of times we find ourselves cruising back in the club market, and that's very popular nowadays, the clubs. I remember before I got married, went to a club, and I went on a blind date to a lady in the club, and after the blind date, I ended up at her house, and she was trying to get me undressed. I just jumped in my little Corvair and left. And nah. She said, "What's wrong with you?" I said, "Nah. I just knew that it wasn't supposed to be that way. Had to be something else more powerful, something else more impactful than myself falling into that." A lot of times we look to our friends. Have you ever gone to, "Hey, man, come on, fix me up with her, man. I think, you know her and she look like she's..." Nah, that ain't the way to start no relationship either. Finding yourself too restless to stay at home alone. You know what you do? You get involved in affairs. And if you're married, it's these extramarital affairs. It happens. It happens even in Christian marriages, because sometimes we don't have this stability factor kind of like involved in our lives. I like the way that Jesus put it in Matthew chapter 19, verse 6. "So then they are no longer two, but one flesh. Therefore, what God has joined together, let no man separate." And you know what they said? They said to Jesus in verse 7, "So why then did Moses give a certificate of divorce and to put her away?" What did Jesus say to her, or to say to them about that in verse 8? Jesus said to them, "Moses, because of the hardness of your heart, permitted you to divorce your wives. From the beginning, it was not so." Now, then Jesus takes it a step further, and I like the way he puts it. Really gets stern here. He says, "And I say unto you, whosoever divorces his wife, except for sexual immorality, and marries another, commits adultery. And whosoever marries her who is divorced commits adultery." And look what his disciples said in verse 10. His disciples said to him, "If such is the case of a man and his wife, it is better not to marry." And Jesus answers in verse 11, and he says, "All cannot accept this saying, but only those to whom it has been given." You see, marriage and the committed relationship has not, and I put emphasis upon this, has not been given to everyone. Some people are going to be rogues because of the mere choosing of it. Now listen, in order to become someone else's mate, you must first be your own. One writer has said that until you care about yourself, how can you develop a relationship with someone else that cares for you? Unless you accept that you are worthy of good treatment, why should anyone else believe it? In other words, what this sentence is saying is that if you have a moral respect for yourself, well, quite naturally, you will have a moral respect for other people. But by setting aside time for reflection and self-development, you see, a lot of times people get involved with other affairs because they have disrespect for themselves. They don't have respect for themselves. And so quite naturally, they don't have respect for the person that they think that they're getting with, and it's supposed to be a respectful relationship. What you have to do is you have to clarify your own mind, who you are, and what you want and need. And the more you understand about yourself, then you begin to like what you discover. The more prepared you are, you will forge into a true marriage soulmate relationship, a relationship with the person that you want to be with the rest of your life. And see, that's why when I was with Lucy, like I said, the chase was not a part of my life. It wasn't something that I was looking forward to. I didn't have to chase around to find anybody else. That whole thought was unfamiliar to me. It wasn't anything that I could really align myself with. The chase was not something that I was into. You know what? When I was a child, I grew up, and no, my parents didn't always example for me the right kind of relationship. I'll never forget. I think I was 10 or 11 years old. A fight that my parents had in front of me where moms hit dad with a skillet. I'll never forget it. I hear the resounding bong right now in my brain. I'll never forget that. And guess what they were arguing over? He was too lazy. It was Saturday. He wanted to watch a ball game on television. She was telling him to cut my brothers and my hair, and he wouldn't do it. And she had just had it with him. Daddy was kind of a lazy guy when he wanted to be, and they went at it. And she kind of held her own in the fighting game. Yes, she did. And trust me, since I grew up with that, you don't want your children to grow up with that kind of stuff. So let me take it another way, and let's look at self-esteem exercise, enjoying yourself. And I don't mean self-esteem in the truly psychological way, because you know that I'm not a psychiatrist, but I don't like the term self-esteem. Looking at you and being healthy with you, I like that. Okay. What you need to do is to make a list of the things that you like about yourself. Hey, I like going out. I like meeting other people. I think I'm a friendly guy. I think I'm a congenial lady. I fix myself up pretty good, so I like that. Secondarily, do something special to enhance your physical appearance without spending huge amounts of money. In other words, get a new haircut, a new hairdo, have your nails done, trim that mustache. Yeah, you know, fix yourself up. I just cut my little white goatee off, and I'm growing my hair back, and not experimenting with hairstyles. When you get older, I've discovered that your hair grows differently when it's gray, and it's more difficult to keep up. I find myself running to the barbershop more and more. That's why I usually cut my hair off bald, because when I have hair and you get older, your hair is just all over your head. It just, you know, that's one of the, so what you have to do is you have to experiment with how you look. You got to, you know, work at yourself. Find ways to reach out to others in your community, in your church, in your neighborhood, okay, in the school that your children go to. Get involved with other people. Set aside some special time to do the things that you enjoy and that make you feel good. Instead of concentrating most of your time in the relationship on the drudgery of being married, on the drudgery of taking care of the kids. And, you know, sometimes it can be overbearing. When I think about it, it never was that overbearing to me. It was kind of exciting. Join support groups that give you a place to air your feelings and to offer a dose of sharing and caring. What better group to meet with a group of sincere Christians that you can talk to that's not going to put you down? But be careful, because you got these Christian groups out there that think that they're holier than thou, and the next thing you know, you shared something with them and it's all over Dodge. You want to be very, very careful about that. Be very careful of the so-called friends that you choose, because everybody that claims to be your friend is not your friend. Not at all. Make an effort to get some exercise. That's one thing that I have to do since I have bro man now here in the house. Should have seen him. He looked at me and said, "What is this guy doing up at 4:15 in the morning?" Headed towards the studio. Looked at me like I was crazy. But I had to get him up and walk his little behind around the block. Exercise, because when the body feels good, so will your mind. There's a connection between the body and the mind. And if you're just hanging around concentrating on the relationship and the things that at this time, which are not necessarily going well in the relationship, it's going to pose a problem. Then if you got a family that's congenial, spend some time with them. Spend some time with your friends. And as you do this, you know what you have to do? You have to develop a positive attitude. Because that positive attitude that you're developing, that's the attitude that's going to nurture you. Change your environment from time to time. You know, I try to tell people, especially people that live in the inner cities, that don't live in the suburbs, and even if you live in the suburb, go to the park, go to the museum, go downtown to have lunch. Go and see some things in your city, okay? Or even move the furniture around in the house. Take a weekend trip. Okay, go to a neighborhood that you've never seen before. Or paint the apartment. I like go to a neighborhood that you've never seen before. What Lucy and I used to do is we used to, since I live in Los Angeles, if we wanted to have a real nice Saturday afternoon, even when we had the girls with us, we'd drive into the city of Beverly Hills, ride around in our car and look at the big mansions and go ooh and ah and look at that one, look at that one. The people in the houses knew what we were doing. We were enjoying the sights. It kind of takes your mind off of the things that you are involved in. And listen, you got to be thankful to God for what you have, because if you're not thankful to God for what you have, as you take these particular drives in the neighborhood, what you're going to do is you're going to resent what God has given you. I'll never forget after we took our little trips through Beverly Hills and Brentwood and driving up Sunset, up in the Hollywood Hills, seeing the way the rich people live, when we would come back down into the basin, we would come home and Lucy would say, oh, and so I said, no, that's not why we did that. We did that to see that God has blessed other people immensely with financial benefits. And we did this, Lucy, and so that we could thank God for the little that he has blessed us with. I didn't try to avoid the fact that I didn't have a lot of money, never have had a lot of money, probably never will have a lot of money. As a matter of fact, last night on the phone, a friend of mine called me and he was trying to tell me that, man, can you believe this? He said that he was reading an article that stated that if you are not making $150,000 to $250,000 a year, that you are not the middle class. And I was telling him, man, you got this thing all wrong. I could not convince him. And I told him that on the average, I don't make more than $45,000 a year. And I told him, I'm purchasing a house. I'm driving a Lexus. I have a little money in the bank. And trust me, I'm not on a poverty level. You see, because it's this idea that people think that if you're not making 150 to 200, you know, if each of you in the house, like you and your wife, are not both making $125,000 a year, that there's something wrong with you. This is an aberration. I'm going to tell you, you don't require that much money in this country to make a decent living. I like what the Bible said, having food and shelter, with that be content. There are so many Christians today that are not content with the things that God has given them, and we're on this mad road race to get more, and that's what's destroying our relationships. Another thing that you need to do is to write down the way you behave that makes you feel good about yourself. In other words, write down, you know, some of the good moments that you've had hanging around a good friend, doing volunteer work in a daycare center, how good it makes you feel being around the children, how when you go to church and you're working there in the kitchen or cleaning up the cloakroom or something like that, or how good you feel in the early morning meditation time, or just when you're just plain walking through the park and enjoying your life. What you want to do is you want to, you know, write these things down and so that you can get in touch with your feelings about that. It's just a wonderful thing. Then at the same time, what you want to do is you want to write down some of the negative behaviors that, you know, put you on a scale that's really going to make you not feel very good about yourself. You want to do that because it's important for you to know that not feeling good about yourself kind of controls the way that you're feeling also. You want to put down your negative feelings, noting that what motivates you to engage these behaviors. You know, what takes you over the edge when she talks to you guys that makes you want to blow up in her face and do things like that? Some examples of negative behavior include procrastination. In other words, you're putting off what you can do today for tomorrow or for later on. Those are negative behaviors. What causes you to procrastinate? How about another one? Self-degeneration. What do you do to degenerate yourself? Have you fallen into habits of drinking a lot of alcohol? Have you fallen back into the habit of smoking that pot again? Because what you're trying to do is you're trying to find a way to feel better about your life. Now, are you involved in a life of passivity? Now, some of you may be saying Christians doing that. What makes you think that Christians are not...